Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, a show that brings you the most important conversations in art, culture, and ideas. Today, I'm at the Gaurav Buddhaya bookstore in Petaling Jaya, and my guest is Vasisthara Manikam. She's a visual artist who came into prominence for NFT artwork that she sold to Snoop Dogg, the American music celebrity. Vasisthara, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. We'll get to Snoop Dogg and the whole NFT issue because it is a fascinating development in the art world. But let's talk about you. You've many years in public relations, and then you decided to go serious with your art, full-time with your art. Could you help us understand your journey as an artist?
Hi, thank you for having me. I've been in the art industry for about 7 years now. I was a photographer as well. That happened much way longer. I've been featured in a lot of exhibitions for photography as well. But none of this was actually a full-time career because financially you couldn't support yourself as an artist. So I was working in public relations and supporting my art dreams, I would say. So I have two different styles of artworks that I do. I call them Ikigai and Ikari. So I'm a self-taught artist. So Ikigai looks at the passions you have in life, the knowledges that you seek, how you want to self-improve yourself. Ikari, for example, looks at art that is anger, it's frustrating, it looks at the depression in life, a lot of political messages as well. So that's something about me.
Okay, but let's talk about your dream to be an artist. I mean, where does it come from?
So I started doing Indian artwork called columns when I was a child.
Those are the floor work that's yes. done often during festive times, right?
Yes. So I used to do that from a very young age, and I've won competitions and all that. And so I spent a whole lifetime doing that. And then I started putting it on canvas. And when I started putting it on canvas, I started exploring different styles, and I found my style that is also influenced by Indian traditional art. It's called the modern Indian art style. It's an art form that came out of in India, and it came out of pre-independence there. And they wanted to look at art, their own art, as for inspiration, and there they developed styles. So I took that as well. And I created my own art style as well.
Okay, and during this journey, I know you're a self-taught artist. Did you collaborate with other artists? Did you have a mentor? Were you looking, for a community of artists when you were kind of evolving your own art styles?
So my art style is inspired by a few artists such as Evan Souza, Jasmine Roy, Jamini Roy. Here over here, I was actually under the mentorship of Stephen Menon. He has a group of artists called Art Voice. It's a group of Indian artists, and he's been putting up shows for us and setting up galleries to bring out Indian artists in Malaysia, because there's not many of us that are getting opportunities. So this was one of his initiatives as a senior artist.
All right. Okay, let's talk about that, the question of opportunities for artists, especially artists. You sort of see yourself primarily as an Indian Malaysian. Is that your primary identity, is it?
No, I see myself as a Malaysian. Your ethnicity still comes into play whenever you are in something. You don't see us in a lot of forms. You don't see us in media. You don't see us in entertainment. You don't see us in fashion. Especially if it's a dark-skinned person, you're not going to see them in any form of popular art in Malaysia. So that's where identity comes in, because you do not get these opportunities because of your identity, of how you look. So that is something that happens.
I don't want to diminish what you said, but I do think if somebody might listening to this might say, well, there are many ethnic Indians who excel in all fields in Malaysia, and dark or fair Indians included, right? So is your characterization a little extreme? I mean, do you think that there's a bit more nuance in the picture?
Look, so if you look at the art industry, how many Indian artists can someone actually name? You could name someone, the first person they're going to say is going to say Pia Dasa. But Pia Dasa is someone who's back in the 70s, and they don't really identify him as an Indian artist. Then you would look at Nirmala Karupaya, and then you would look at people like Jagannath Ramachandran, Sheikh Tajuddin, and Stephen Menon. After that, what happens? Where does the whole industry go? And there's so many artists that have been left out over the couple of years. Who are the artists? What are the new names coming up? Are they being given opportunities? Are we seeing them given opportunities? Artists can't come out if they don't have opportunities. If they don't get featured in the right galleries here, you're not going to get purchased, you're not going to get to further your career. And you can't actually survive on a career that doesn't sell.
Indeed. So this, you know, your mentor and his attempt to create a community and opportunities for, did that work? Was it, and did it become, was it limiting in any way to be identified as an Indian artist rather than just an artist?
That's the problem. You want to be identified as a Malaysian artist, but people don't see you as that. So that becomes the problem. You do not get opportunities just because you're a Malaysian artist. As a self-taught artist, that becomes another hurdle because nobody knows you. You're not associated with any particular lecturer. You're not associated with any particular school. So we see that as a way as that limits a lot of opportunities for you.
Right. So opportunities come from government, you know, to public institutions, national gallery. They also come through, you know, the market, through the gallery system, for instance, and also individual collectors. And of course, Malaysian artists do sell abroad. And so we know of, you know, well-known Malaysian artists. Simran Gill, I think, would be one Malaysian Indian woman / Australian artist who's done very well. And then, of course, Wong Hoi Chong and all those people who have done well abroad. Where are the opportunities for you, somebody like yourself, coming from?
So that's when the pandemic happened. I was actually looking for opportunities overseas. I had done a residency in Udaipur, India, back in 2019. I have done exhibitions in Japan, Jakarta, all before that. When the pandemic happened, you were stuck here. You can't leave the country. So I did get an opportunity in South Korea. My art was featured there and it sold. But when you are not able to leave at that point, you need to find different ways. And that's when I heard about NFTs. When I heard about NFTs in September 2020, I started researching that it's a totally new thing. The whole technology, the whole blockchain industry, how it works, how you have to connect with everything. It took some time to learn before I actually joined in June 2021.
Okay. We're going to hold that NFT conversation till the second part of the show because it is quite technical. I want you to help me understand what is specific to it because we know artists have been using Facebook or Instagram, especially Instagram because it's such a visual platform. To sell their work, basically. And I believe in someone like Red Hong Yi has decided that you can get the NFT and the real thing, as it were, right? And these are different strategies. What is it that is the most challenging for you as an artist? Is it because there's a certain style that you have to, you know, you have to fit into an aesthetic that is sellable, or you have to paint at scale that is sellable? What is it that limits an artist in playing in the art world here in Malaysia?
That's the thing. If you want to say style, I would say Malaysians have a thing for Western art. So if an artist looks at Eastern styles, there's probably going to be a less audience for it. That's one. Second, there is the limitation that here art, collectors buy based on what is recommended by the galleries. They don't really buy based on the art itself or the artist itself. So that is actually a limitation that happens.
Right, so you have to have a good relationship with the gallery, the gallerists. And how has that been for you? What has your experience been with the gallery system as a whole and with gallerists?
I've sent applications to many galleries and usually we don't get any replies back. I've had opportunities in two galleries, two known galleries. But as part of open calls, see, and but open calls are very rare in Malaysia. So the ones that I used to take part, I had those, yes.
And what is the feedback, Janet? I mean, if someone's not calling you or not interested in your work, do they tell you why? And does an artist grow? Because rejection is part of life, right? So have you learned about what is making you or your art not as attractive to the market?
No, actually, I didn't get any response from any of the galleries. Where else, if I send something to Japan or something, because I used to take part in a few open calls for residencies there, they would actually reply back and say, we chose this particular artist because we wanted this particular thing for this season. So, you know, you got that kind of feedback, but we used to never get feedbacks from Malaysia.
Okay, we'll take a short break at this point in time. And we'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Visitra Manikam, she's a visual artist. We've been talking about her trials and challenges as a visual artist in Malaysia. And, you know, you mentioned the question of race and your gender and, you know, on how those things come together. But in the NFT space, which is, I think it was the story that sort of got you lots of visibility, because you sold to somebody famous, and that has a kind of knock-on effect, as it were, right? You sell to Snoop Dogg, everybody knows Snoop Dogg, now everybody's interested in you, or at least curious about you. And I wonder if you could help tell that story of how you sold to Snoop Dogg and what it meant for you after that.
So while the story got visibility on a Malaysian scale and an Asian scale, it's not really a big thing for the community, the NFT community, because for us, we have to build ourselves in a community, and the community is on Twitter. We spend time there, we make friends, made friends from all over the world. I've got collectors from 223 collectors from every part of the world. They're mostly in the US and in the Western Hemisphere, but also China and Hong Kong. But that's the thing, you get to meet and present your art to the global audience, and they decide if they want to buy your art or not. And I've been extremely lucky that my work was accepted and celebrated, and that's how eventually I had Snoop Dogg as one of my collectors.
Okay, so the NFT world, and this is the non-fungible token dimension to this, is digital art that has a signature, a digital signature that makes it unique. That's what the NFT is, isn't it? Isn't it in a nutshell, or correct me if I'm wrong, tell me, what is it that makes this different from, say, putting out a work on Instagram and then somebody says, I like that, and then you send them the work? What exactly is NFT artwork?
So while you say that's the technical explanation of it, I'm going to put it in a different perspective. NFTs are actually just another platform to sell your art. And the thing with art here is they have different categories of art. You have arts, you have collectibles, you have music, and so many different ways, but it's uploaded into the blockchain, and that's how it's sold. But if you look at it, it's just another platform, something like Etsy. It's not really a social media because you can't communicate with people there. You can't leave comments, you can't leave likes and interactions. It's more of a place where people can see your art and they buy it from there. And the thing with being on the blockchain is you see who has bought it, when it was purchased, how much it was purchased, and then when someone else purchases, they still see it. And the best part is when someone else purchases the art again, as an artist, I would get royalties for it.
Right. Okay. So what's interesting about the NFT world, and this is partly, you know, the media's fault, as it were, is the hype around it, right? And so the large numbers, because I know the transactions are often in cryptocurrencies, Ethereum or Bitcoin or whatever it is, But the real world currency numbers are huge sometimes, and extraordinarily huge for the kinds of things that are being sold, right? So that sort of got everybody excited, and I'm sure a lot of artists said, well, because most artists, for whatever reason, are poor and starving and struggling, and they don't get much support in Malaysia especially, they thought, well, maybe this is a time to cash in. And has there been a kind of cashing mentality with the NFT world? I mean, do you find that that's been the sentiment driving interest in using the NFTs as a way of expressing yourself?
See, artists, there's been artists in different mediums. You look at artists and animation, or artists who do digital art like anime. They never had a platform besides the comic worlds or prints or, movies to actually sell their art on an independent way. Because if you sold at a movie, you don't actually get much credit. You come on a credit run, but no one actually sees you as that artist. They see it as the movie created by this director. So NFTs actually give the artist credibility. They celebrate the artist. So basically, any art that I produce will be seen as art produced by me and not a collaboration with the platform or anything else. It's a place where they celebrate the artist or the collaborations that the artists do, but again, the artist becomes the one that is being celebrated.
Right. You began this conversation by saying that you had two distinct styles, and they seem to have very Japanese names. Just to my ear, they sounded Japanese. Is that expressed in your NFT work as well? What is available as an NFT? Those two styles.
Yeah, so I call them that because I didn't want to say positive and negative. Because sometimes the negative
is it Japanese?
Yeah, it is Japanese words.
Okay, these are
so
Japanese.
Ikagi means ikigai means finding a passion in life.
Okay, let's stop there. Could you just mention one of your works? We're going to show the audience your ikigai work, and then you can talk it through a little bit. Tell us what it is that we're looking at.
Okay, so this particular piece is called in the Garden of My Mind. So it's about how we are always seeking for, looking for different things in life. We're trying to search the world to find who we are, what we are, and find new knowledges and find what is going to send us to a different path in life. So that is actually usually the theme behind my works.
Okay, so it's kind of meditative work, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other style that you mentioned?
So that's Ikari. So Ikari looks at the wrath, the frustrations you have in life.
The passion,
anger you have in life. And it came out of the pandemic. I was very frustrated with what was happening with the pandemic. So it turned out into a different style of art. And this style is actually very much a style that is something like Michael John Boskowitz's work, FN Zauzer. So it's very angry, it's very sarcastic. And so
could you mention one work that we can look at?
So this one particular work is Normie. So Normie is actually a dig at the art industry itself. It's about how they hate a lot of people in the art industry actually hate the NFT world. So they rather sell an art for 50% profit rather than getting 97.5% profit, which is what I get, because the platforms only take 2.5%. So, and you know, they're going to hold on to this anger, that the hate that they have towards NFT. So,
why do they hate the NFT art?
There's a lot of things that people say, that they say it's environmentally problematic. But if you look at actual environmental numbers, your usage of air conditioning, flying, is actually more harmful to the environment, but we still do that.
Okay, so it's, I guess, for people who don't know, the blockchain, processes require a lot of energy, right? So that has been, in fact, one of the biggest challenges for cryptocurrencies as well, because of the carbon footprint. Okay, but lastly, as we kind of wrap up this conversation, and it's been fascinating, could you tell me what kind of reception the NFT world is getting here, and your part in sort of, negotiating this?
So since the article came up, I've had a lot of artists who've contacted me. I actually answer a lot of questions on how people can join NFTs, and many artists have actually joined. But it's also attracted a lot of people looking into investing into NFTs, because, like I said, there's two different kinds of NFTs. There's the ones that you can be an artist, or you can do the collectible section. And we are also seeing people producing collectible projects. But whatever you do, I would suggest that you do your own research, because some of the people bringing in projects are actually just looking to cash in. So that we call a rug pull. So I would really, really tell people to be careful.
Yeah, I like that expression, because, you know, to pull the rug from under somebody's feet is an English expression, meaning, you know, you kind of sabotage them. And what a rug pull is people setting up something, getting investors to come in, and then fleeing with the money, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So, okay, so the NFT world, art world, is like the real world, isn't it?
Yes.
Because we know in the real world there are any number of charlatans and people who are out to scam others, right? Okay, so that's a good word of warning. But in terms of pushing your art, your aesthetics, is it shaping it in any way, or you're just basically on the same trajectory in terms of your aesthetics, concerns, and about using, you know, new innovative platforms?
In one second, I would say I would have a lot of freedom. I no longer have to think about what is needed, what is sold, what is popular in Malaysia. I can create art that I like, and no one restricts you, and there is a market for it. There's a market for every kind of art in NFTs. Where one of the things is, it's also a place where I'm getting opportunities. I've already shown my work in Los Angeles, New York. I've been selected to be a speaker at NFT NYC, the biggest NFT conference in the world. I'm also getting shown my art on the NFT on Times Square billboard. So these are opportunities I wouldn't have been able to get if I hadn't gone into NFTs.
So, okay, visitor, it's been a fascinating discussion. Understand the trials and tribulations, and they're real, they need to be addressed. And I hope at some point the Malaysian art community, galleries, artists, policymakers come together and discuss exclusion and discrimination in the art world in Malaysia at some point. It must happen. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences and your thoughts.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Visitra Manikam. She's a visual artist here on Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan, only for Astro Wani.